This is an interview with Mr. Tibor Baranski by Josie Fisher. Mr. Baranski, can you tell us where and when you were born and a little bit about your background?
In the 1880s, a Polish gentleman, after the third dismemberation of Poland, when Poland disappeared from the map of Europe and the southern part of Poland was close to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was ordered to spend his soldier time in Budapest. This gentleman was my grandfather, Albert Baranski. He fell in love with the Hungarian city, and after his 3 years of soldier duty, he married in Budapest. Rudolf, or in Hungarian, Rezsi Baranski, my father was born there. And since Austria-Hungary was together for 400 years, it was quite natural that he fell in love with a lady who was born in Wiener Neustadt, in a suburb of Vienna, Maria Sternede, and this lady became my mother. These two persons were unfortunately a little bit too short, deeply in love, because later on my parents got divorced, and this I do not want to comment on this tape. I was born on June the 11th, 1922, in Budapest, and according to superstitious people, on a very lucky time, Sunday morning, 7 o'clock. I was raised in very, very deep and affectionate love, sometimes maybe a little bit soft love, but God was gracious enough to give me a lot of illnesses, which well balanced, so thanks God I did not become a pampered brat. The greatest influence on my life was done first by my grandfather, who was a highly educated person, a very multi-talented person, Béla Sternede, who was absolutely superb in mathematics and engineering. He was in the calculating office of the first Hungarian aeronautic office, only a little nucleus in the end of the 1910s and beginning of 1920s. But except sports, this gentleman knew almost every field. He was not excellent, but a fairly good painter. He had a fantastic good voice. He liked to sing. He knew literature. And since he mastered better German than Hungarian, he was a co-worker of the Pester Lloyd newspaper in Budapest of German language. The funny thing was that although he worked to this paper, his pen name, which would have been just unnecessary because the Sternede was a very good German name, no, as a pen name he used a Hungarian name in the German paper calling himself Vas. So if somebody is looking in the end of 1910s and the 1920s in Pester Lloyd, he will find very likely several articles of my grandfather's. Unfortunately, I had never time to dig out them, would have been interesting. These gentlemen had an enormous influence on me. He could teach me of things. I give you a good example. When I saw as a 4 years old child a streetcar, I could explain you how the copper and the iron ore was mined, melted, made a railroad of it, installed in the street, how the wood was cut out, mastered in factories, made the seats in the streetcar. And he could tell me all this like a fairy tale. So except reading and writing, when I was 5 years old, I had the intellectual education of a 10, 12, 13 years old child, due to the influence of my grandfather.
What was their religious influence?
The religious influence was in another way very deep, because my grandmother was very much of a churchgoer. As a child who was very sensitive for cold and flus, I was many, many times in danger that I will die. I will tell you later that between 14 and 19 I had every year one pneumonia. and the first two pneumonias were so serious that I really almost died. So I can remember that when I was as a little boy, 2, 3, 4 years old, in my bed, and my chest was full of flu, and I was hardly able to take breath, and my grandma was sitting all night praying rosary and asking God to help this little lousy boy to stay alive. And we went to a Holy Mary shrine called Maria Remete in a Buddha site of Budapest. And I was very often there with my grandmother. So from my early childhood on, I had a very serious devotion to Holy Mary. And now, as a Hungarian poet and writer, when I had chosen myself a pen name, I created it from Holy Mary's name. In Hungarian, Mary is Maria. And I created for myself a pen name, Mariási, for the devotion to the Mother of Christ. But I remember from childhood on, my grandmother was very, very much religious, and she tried to educate me in this way. I know we went every Sunday to church, and when just we have now October, we have the Holy Mary devotions every evening in Europe in May and in October, and I was raised in this way. I can say that I was so much, in spite of my outgoing nature, I was in the same time, people say that I'm a little bit schizophrenic because I was born in Gemini, that they are usually double people. I'm very much meditative. I know from circumstances that usually every morning when my grandmother came to wake me up around 8 o'clock, I exposed to her my meditations when I was waiting for her, and one morning I surprised her. And I said, Grandma, I know that you are an old lady, and they are much older ladies than you, and they are younger ladies than you, and then here is my mother who is younger, and I am very little. How was that? When did I start to become? And this meditation, how old I am and what is about life, they came up when I was 3 years old, so I know I was very much introvert and very much thinking. Another morning I surprised my grandma similarly about this, then I went in the other direction. I said, okay, Grandma, you told me now that I was once born, but I cannot understand how I was born. And then I am now a little boy, and then I say, bigger boys and bigger girls, and you are old and very old. Could you tell me now how old is God? Mm. So this was another morning. I was fairly meditative and introvert in spite of my outgoing nature. On the other hand, when we went to the park, they could not hold me back to run to another child and kiss the child because I wanted to love other people.
Were you schooled in Catholic schools, or were you in the public system?
Since we were a middle-class people, undoubtedly, let me spend for this only a very little time. The Baranskis in Poland are a 700-year registered old noble Polish family of different branches. Some of my family came over to Hungary from Poland not by reasons, as I mentioned you, that a part of Poland was annexed to Austro-Hungary, but in this time it was not. They came over from themselves, and they remained still big shots. But later on, when Austria-Hungary was devoured a part of Poland, then those Polish people became very desperate and tried to make a conspiracy against the Austrian emperor. And they were caught, and according to good practical methods, some of them were executed and private property confiscated, so the branch of my family became very poor. Never mind of our noble and other background and rich background. Naturally, the rich part of the Baranski family didn't want to have any connection with the rebels for two reasons, because they were rebels and they became poor. Maybe the poor people will ask the rich one for some money. So we became, I wouldn't say beggars, but in a fairly modest middle-class financial situation. Consequently, we had no way to send our children for a while to private school because it costed money. Mm-hmm. I was only lucky enough, in spite of it, I went to government schools or public schools, how you call them, whatever phrase you like. Still in the old-fashioned Hungary, our level was fairly good mm-hmm. and fairly strict. I give you, probably for you it will be interesting to know as Americans, that the so-called Hungarian gymnasium is not a sport place, it is a high school. Because gymnastic means training, and this was the place of an intellectual training. Our gymnasium system had an 8-year system. You started when you were 10, and these classes were like what you call here grade 5, that was form 1, and grade 6 is form 2. So from form 1 to form 8, which equals form 8 to grade 12. But our pattern of study was enormously strong. You learned 8 years Hungarian language and literature from form 1 to 8, from your age 10 to 18. You learned 8 years Latin. When you became 12 years old, you started to go to form 3, would be here grade 7. You had to start grade 7, okay? You studied for 6 years German. Then again you became 14 years old, you had an elective obligatory language. You had the right to choose, but you could not drop it. I had chosen English, so I studied 4 years English. Let me repeat, 8 years Hungarian and Latin, 6 years German, 4 years English. In my case, for a certain reason, I studied 8 years German and 6 years Latin, never mind. So at least what I want to bring out now in this conversation, that you should know that our high school education, even in public school, was very strong.
What was your social experience in high school in terms of other children from different backgrounds, for instance, the Jewish children?
Even, you see, Mrs. Fisher, here I have to go back again. My first experience with the Jews is this, that either one of the best or verbally the best friend of my grandmother was a sweet old Jewish woman, Mrs. Schwartz. And so I was educated together with Mrs. Schwartz, who liked me very, very much. The funny thing, Schwartz means in English black. And later on, her daughter was married to another Jew whose name was Mr. Fekete. But the Hungarian word Fekete means black in English. So Miss Schwartz was married by a Mr. Fekete. Both names means black. And later on, I married this lady because I met this lady many, many times, this old lady, because I moved to another district, and by fun, she moved again to the same district. So I saw her last when I was around 17 or 18 years old. She lived about 2 blocks from me, and she still loved me affectionately because she knew me from my birth, and that was the first contact.
Did you spend time in her home with the family?
In my grandmother's time, she was rather with us. Later on, when I lived in Buda North, called Obuda, then I was more often in her home than she was in my home, because her son-in-law was the co-owner of a famous factory. There were two Jews who ran the factory, Mr. Gutmann and Mr. Fekete. And if you see on old Hungarian products, GFB, that means the factory of Gutmann and Fekete in Budapest. And this was a famous factory only 2 or 3 blocks from my home, and I several times walked over to Mrs. Schwartz and I drank with her a fine, good cappuccino in Capuchin way, a coffee and a good homemade cake and so on. So yes, so it was up to about
1939, 1940. Did you have classmates, friends of your own age also who were Jewish?
Oh yes, and we were in fairly good relation. One of the shocking deed, what you will hear from me later, a little boy, Korinsky Jóska, we Hungarians always say first the family name, Joe Korinsky, who was a little tiny Jewish boy, awfully diligent, very nice. His parents were umbrella makers. And you will hear later, when I will be in my appointment as an executive secretary of the Holy See in Hungary, and I will meet his parents without a son, being on the way to get deported, and I could not help them. And they will ask me, please, Reverend, we are not Catholics, we are not so and so, but we have a son. He was ripped off from us a couple of weeks ago. We don't know what. If you have any contact, can you help us? And they open a university lecture, little booklet, and I see the photograph of my own classmate. And I can still say almost in tears that I never saw Joe and I could never help him. And he was sitting 3 desks before me. He was so small. He was sitting in the first desk. I don't know what happened to him. This I don't even like to talk because I will get a little bit too soft. It is a very heavy memory. He was a sweet, nice little guy. I had a few Jewish classmates. As with anybody else, some of them were closer to me, some of them by normal human nature, but my entire attitude from my home on was just natural to them. Maybe later on when Mrs. Fisher will ask me about that, then I will comment, what about this global dark shadow that the Hungarians are, the anti-Semites and so on. So usually I don't like too much global thing because they are always twisting. Later on I will comment on this.
What about when you were in school? Did you have a sense of that feeling? Did you have a sense of tension in your classroom, in your growing up period between the Jews and the Christians?
In the elementary school, absolutely nothing, which I spent in a suburb of Budapest called Újpest. There was absolutely nothing, and there was, I think so, either nothing or didn't observe in one of the high schools, because the first six forms I finished in the so-called Árpád Gymnasium in Buda, I would say Óbuda, in Old Buda. I observed some of the tension of this in my last 2 years of high school when I changed school and I moved to the most condensed Jewish district of Budapest. You probably know that from Budapest, which was in this time approximately 1,200,000 people, population from this 1,200,000, I would say over 200,000 were Jews, and this district where I went to high school, called Madács Gymnasium or Barcsai Street Gymnasium. Even you American Jews will sometimes hear about it because this was a fairly famous place and some very capable people came from there. This was already 1938, when the pressure of the German Nazis became bigger and bigger in Hungary. By joke, our gymnasium was called the Second Jewish, because there was as it was Catholic gymnasiums in Budapest, there was Jewish gymnasium established by Jews. Our gymnasium was called the second greatest Jewish gymnasium, because it's true that in my class, the class size in Europe was between 40 and 50, which is for America an enormous high number, but this was over there natural. So in my class, we were about 44 or 45 people. In a Catholic-dominated country, in my class we were 12 Catholics, but 22 or 23 Jews.
Mm.
Now, since the Nazi pressure started to become bigger and bigger, you could sometimes feel that there is some uneasy thing, and my impression is one of my classmates later became involved with the German Volksbund in Hungary. He was originally a very nice guy, and we became with this man almost friends. And sometimes I saw that he didn't want too much friendship with me, and I didn't understand. And when I finished high school in 1940, and for a totally different reasons, what I don't want to explain, would not belong to this day, I went to the so-called German Volksbund house. Still I have to say, because you would be interested, what has Baranski do in the German Volksbund house, when I finished my high school, I wanted to become a lawyer. And since I was financially not strong enough, for 1 year I wanted to go to an office to work and get a little money, and after then start with university. So I went to an insurance company, not as a salesman, as a worker, as an office worker. And this insurance company sent me for official reason to the German house, because the Hungarian Volksbund leader was our client, Mr. Bosch. And I entered this house going to him for official reason. He had a car insurance with our company. And whom do I see in one room than my former classmate? And then I understood that since this man became a traitor and wanted to collaborate with Nazis, although I approached him with friendship, he was afraid to admit my friendship because he knew that I will not approve it. So this man became awfully pale when he saw me, that I see him as a little Gauleiter in this Volkshaus. But otherwise, except this man, if I would say, was there in our class really attention. If there was, up to a certain, what I'm almost sure there was, but this was absolutely not natural, this was a created thing, so somebody did something in underground, not by nature, that he would say, hey, you damn stinky Jew, such a thing, thanks God, even in spite of the Nazi pressure, was not in our class, definitely not.
Did you feel anything from the teachers, from the administration, during the
30s? No. In the Arpad Gymnasium in Budo, absolutely nothing, that is out of question. Absolutely nothing. In the so-called Madás Gymnasium or Borsay Street Gymnasium, from the staff, never anything, because our staff was still, this was a high school and our staff was still well-balanced. I tell you, this was a very quality government school. Most of the teachers from this school were named later principals to other schools. So this school was, in government scale, one of our three or four best high schools of Hungary.
Among the class, itself, there were personal friendships going back and
forth to people's houses. In Mother, I tell you right away, there was just a few days ago, I met one of my former classmates who lives now in Canada. I didn't see this gentleman since 46 years. I got my high school diploma in 1940. And with him we talked about our former classmates. One of our most outstanding boy was my very good friend, a Jewish boy called Andrew Pashkes. As you say in English, Andy, we called him Bundy. Pashkes Bundy was an absolutely of superb quality, both intellectually and morally. When we had the Hungarian Literary Club, he was the star over there. I was only the executive secretary of the club. I was not too bad, but if I consider this man at least, with all my non-humble nature, he was at least 30-35% better than I was, no doubt. He was very excellent both in qualities and in morals. He was, as a high school student, he was able to give us three lectures without reading. He was so much full of knowledge and he had this eloquence. He was an absolutely of superb quality.
So you were in the gymnasium during during the period of Hitler's rise in Germany and during the beginning of the spread of Nazism. What was the discussion among the students between you and your friends? What did you know? What did you speculate?
Look, number one, if you are involved deeply in studies, I cannot say except the last 2 years just when I went over to this other high school, when you are already after 16, then you really started in the old-fashioned world to become a semi-adult and start to talk about political things. But this I can tell you very honestly, I didn't find a single person, maybe this boy whom I mentioned you before who became a Nazi, he didn't dare to express probably his opinion, I didn't find a single person among the Christians. As I told you, there were about 12 Catholics and I think so, seven or how many Presbyterians, we call them in Hungary Calvinists, and all the rest were Jews. But I don't think so any of us would have approved what Hitler did. And I already mentioned here, I will probably repeat in my later statements, if anybody has ever here in America the temptation to say, either by ignorance or by bad influence, that Nicholas Horthy, our old regent, was a Nazi, then I have to say it's a very poor thing if we get ever the questions what I got as a history teacher in the United States. That in Canada even more, I taught once in Canada and I got the question which was the following, and I have to put it here now because by nature in our relaxed conversation it just comes up now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell Mr. Baranski, I was addressed in Canada, was Nicholas Horthy a Nazi? And I became nasty and I saw that the boy was not a heckler, it was, he heard about. So I gave a mild sarcasm, I said to him, of course, did you not know that the English king was a communist?
Mm.
And the boy in Canada got out, but Mr. Baranski, I said, stop for a moment, did you not say that the reason why you ask it, because Hungary became an ally to Germany, so naturally Nicholas Horthy had to be a Nazi. I told, this is why I say, my dear son, since England became an ally to Russia, so very likely the English king had to be a communist. This was already in grade 11 or 12, and the boy was very bright, and he said to me, Mr. Baranski, I give you now a very clear distinction. England was never a real political ally to Russia. England was a war ally to Russia. I said, son, God bless you for this clear distinction. Hungary, even if Hungary sometimes was political ally, Hungary never wanted to be. Hungary realized, because in 1919 we had a five months communism in Hungary, where communism executed between 100 and 150,000 people in 5 months. So we knew what communism is. In the meantime, Hungary was mutilated at the end of the First World War, and the 1,000-year-old kingdom lost 2/3 of its former territories. So we had two motivations. Hitler promised us that if we help him, he will be strong enough to keep the communists away, and he will help us to get back our old territories.
Did you think that that would happen?
Since we knew, number one, I want to lay down one thing. I'm not too bad in scholastics aside, languages, history, philosophy. I was always very lousy on science. But one thing many of us suspected, that since the Germans are so excellent in science, either militarily or in science or in both, they will be able to counterbalance the Russians. Not because of the number, but because of their superior scientific knowledge. So when Hitler promised the miraculous gun, most of us believed in it because we knew that they were able to do absolutely unexpected things, and we said, why not? Meanwhile, what is again interesting, I switch now to another topic, but for you will be interesting to know, even the proud German said that, I give you almost verbally a statement from a German general. The guy said, the name doesn't come now to my mind. If I would be able, said the German, to have a German leadership and Hungarian soldiers, I would beat the entire world, which means that the Germans believe that as soldiers, our soldiers are of better quality than the Hungarian, than the Germans.
When did you first think that there was more to what Hitler was after than the scientific offering of a fight against communism?
Yeah, look, I was still in high school, I would say from approximately in the 1939-1940 academic year, when I was between 17 and 18, and I started to have more and more interest to get into political things to understand what is going on. Then I saw that there is a pan-Germanistic attitude, and Germany wants to be the absolute lord of Europe, I mean, the Germans. Many of the Germans, my sweet audience, did not agree with that. But you know, most of us have always a national pride. Napoleon made the French to believe that they are the only people, and this happens to us easily. If you want to know the character of China, means in English translation, the middle of the world. We all people have chauvinistic attitude. So I was in my last year of high school when I realized that Germany wants to be the absolute lord. And then I realized, which bothered my national pride, that one of my very well-balanced Hungarian fatherly friends, 45, 50 years old gentleman who was very educated, had shown me a copy of the first two or three editions of the Mein Kampf, Hitler's book. And there was a very bad statement which made me furious. And this was, I give you the German sentence, and I saw this sentence in the book, when he wrote at that time in the beginning about the Hungarians, and he didn't know that once the Hungarians will become his ally. I quote now almost verbally, what I will say now is 90%. He wrote the same things with the same heaviness of construction. When he wrote about Hungarians, quote, he now smit diesen Zigeunervolk from Europa. Out with these gypsy people from Europe.
And you knew about that?
I saw that text. I saw that text in the Mein Kampf. This gentleman had one of the first three editions.
This was in what year?
When was the first edition? I don't know now.
No.
Was it
but
published?
I saw this
in 1939-40 academic year. I was in my last year in high school. And this sentence made me furious. Naturally, when Hitler became our political ally, from the next edition of the Mein Kampf, this statement was dropped. So if you buy now, I don't know, from the ninth edition or on, I don't know, you will not find this sentence. You will not find this sentence. He was smart enough to drop this. because you see, and for a short while we thought that maybe we can be in this way an ally, that this will not go over into ideological way. At least I can say with good conscience, until I was in high school, it was nothing if I compare with the American leftist education, because you talk to now to a high school teacher who was taught for a number of years history. I can tell you with good conscience, up to 1940, in our high school was not this spirit in regard of Nazism, but is here in the United States in regard of communism. We several times talk so that Hitler was a dictator, but Stalin was only a generalissimo. Why do we not say that Stalin was in the same way the red dictator as Hitler was the brown dictator?
You're questioning that now.
Yeah, of
why
course.
At that time
so
you didn't
such a thing was not in Hungary. We did not brainwash our kids until 1940, until I finished high school, where I was the first eyewitness. It was not told to us what a fine guy Hitler is. We said that it is very likely, what I heard that was the strongest statement, that very likely that Nazism will be strong enough to counterbalance the detrimental influence.
This is tape one, side two of an interview with Mr. Tibor Baranski.
So let me finish this sentence, that they thought that Nazism will be strong enough to counterbalance the detrimental influence of communism. And look, let me give you here another, you see one question runs into another question, but if you maybe want, or your institution, I can give you later a little 3-4 page brief resume of this to put it chronologically or so to help you that when you are confused maybe on the loopholes of this state. One thing is absolutely clear, that from the first moment on communism started, I want world domination and atheistic world domination by any tool and any price. This was no doubt. The other thing which was no doubt, since in Europe, after the last First World War, came a communist wave. In Hungary it lasted 5 months, in another country lasted 2-3 months. Germany was so much down, so much demoralized from the last First World War, that the most respected German by everybody, English, Jew, everybody, Mr. Hindenburg, who was really of high moral standard. He was mainly a soldier, but with very decent private life and everything, which means he did not run after women, not this and that. In every respect, professionally, so he was a reliable person with a fairly broad horizon. He was fairly old in the time when people asked him, tell us sincerely, you can die any day. We are now in a very shaky position. If you will die, we can slip back easily into either verbal communism or a very heavy communist influence. And I can quote for you, I know it from reliable Germans, I had fairly good connections. Hindenburg's answer was the following. I don't like this little suspicious corporal called Adolf Hitler, but I suggest you vote for him. I hope so he will be not worse than the communists.
How did you understand Hitler's moves in Austria, Czechoslovakia, his invasion of Poland? This was all before, you're talking about the year 39 to 40.
Now this let me comment. This is interesting. There was almost no Hungarian, including the very low number of the Hungarian Nazis. To this point I come later. We all understood that this is German expansion. We did not misunderstand it. We all understood it right away, that this is now German expansion, not only German extension from Kaiser Wilhelm II, this is German expansion from a dictatorial system.
And how did you think it was going to affect you in Hungary?
Some of us, if I would comment on the percentile, I would be a bubbler. I was too young to this to see a cross cut in the country. But I do believe that the smartest of us said, until we had no doubt that it's only a matter of time, in spite of we were not big politicians, but we saw that, we pre-saw it, that sooner or later will be a face-to-face confrontation with communism. And we thought, oh God, how good would be if these two systems would demolish each other.
Before either of them got to Hungary.
We knew that the Germans now, they come to Czechoslovakia. They devour half part of Poland. So when they made the agreement, one I always call sarcastically, when the brown communists made an agreement with the red Nazis, we right away knew that soon this agreement will be not enough. We have a famous Hungarian proverb, I say it in Hungarian, I translate it in German, egy csárdában két dudás nem fér meg. Two pipe players in one inn are too much, or two fiddlers in one inn are too much. The German idea was drunk nach Osten. The Stalin ideas were drunk nach Westen. The Germans wanted to expand towards East. The Russian communist imperialism wanted to expand towards West. So it was so obvious. We were really a little bit shocked and surprised. How the hell did these two become now allies for a while? But some of the smarter said this allyship will not last too long, and it did not, because they needed space.
You're talking now about the Hitler-Stalin pact.
Hartley-Stalin, yeah, and when they agreed with Ribbentrop that now they will devour half of Poland and half of Poland.
Mm-hmm.
But then this was the time when we saw that in spite of it, because the Hungarians and the Polish, although the Polish are Slavic and we are not, but both countries are Catholic, and we were in the history only, if I'm not mistaken, don't trust me now, maybe I make a mistake, I think that we were only twice enemies, but all the time warm and close allies. When the persecuted Polish had problems, they escaped to Hungary. When we had problems, we escaped to Poland. So between us was really a very cordial relation. And we were deeply sorry that Poland suffered so much. Our only hope was that soon the two dictatorial systems will confront each other and hopefully will either demolish each other or seriously weaken each other. This was the hope of many of us.
Meaning that you hoped that everything would be resolved before it hit your own borders.
Yes, we did. We were not so sure, since Poland and Hungary are the corridors between East and West in this very drafting part of the world. We thought that, yes, maybe the big storm will rush north from us. We were not sure that we became more and more suspicious of it, because when we had to enter on the Hitler side, the war, because Hitler's not only promise, but a promise and frightening. You must enter of my side if you want that I should help you politically to get back your old territories. The so-called Russian bombing of the same Hungarian city where I studied theology, Kossuth. What we now know for sure, that this was a German provocation in a Russian airplane. I am not a strategist in this section, don't believe me now. It was either a Russian airplane mastered in this time by a German pilot. The important thing was to make us to believe that the Russians were bombing a Hungarian city. So we should declare war against Russia. But behind this was Hitler with the promise and frightening, you want to get back the rest of your territories? Come and help us.
Did you have any understanding at that time of what else was involved in Hitler's plan for Europe.
What I said about 8-10 minutes ago, I really shocked, and from this time on, with full speed I was looking after as much as time I could devote, what is Hitler's plan with us, because when I saw my own classmate sitting in the Volksbund house, then I started really to open my eyes and look what the Volksbund does. And I definitely know we had, again, let me stop here. The Turks were in Hungary for 150 years. They were driven out from Hungary in 1686. The middle of Hungary became totally empty. The Austrian emperor, who was unfortunately Hungarian king for 400 years, very often a lousy king, sent an announcement all over Europe, come to Hungary for 10 years or 15 years, will be tax exempt because the country is empty, start with a new life. This was the beginning when so many Germans came to our country, because the country was empty. Naturally, it is not so easy that I come now to, as a German to Hungary or as an Italian to Hungary. We had even an Italian settlement, even Italians signed up to come to Hungary. They became later on all Hungarians after 300 years. But I want to tell you only that to live in the neighborhood of Austria, you will not become a zealous Hungarian at all. But we were in fairly good relation until Hitler came and some of those German guys in Hungary who were bilingual, they spoke very good Hungarian and still German, they started to become hostile against us due to instigation of what the Nazis did. But again, I can see why I'm so sorry for them, that when the communists wanted to take revenge in the name of this, I can say with good conscience, maximum one-fifth of the German-speaking ethnic group in Hungary became crazy Nazi, and all the rest did not. Yet the communists took revenge on all those Germans of ethnic, and this was absolutely not right, because before, and I lived in a German district, Obuda, Buda North, was heavily full of Germans. And in the time of Hitler's, when he was the star, they did not become crazy for him. They didn't dare to contradict, because you knew you can get in jail in 10 minutes, just like under communism. But secretly they tried to be as much anti-Nazi as possible. And later on, when I come in chronologically to the time, I will tell you about those German soldiers who came through Budapest and spent 3-4 hours in my home and were crying with me together when they explained me what did Hitler do from their own country. Don't think so that the Germans are the Nazis, as never think that the Russians are the communists. My sweet audience, you are totally wrong. In Russia, obligatorily, about 7% of the Russians are members of the Communist Party, and not even those 7% are in their heart communists. Can you imagine, I had a German priest in my home for one afternoon, who was drafted as a regular soldier, no priest distinction, nothing. He was, as a matter of fact, a monk, and his entire monastery was confiscated by Adolf Hitler. So I can tell you, if somebody has experience, although I was not myself in Germany, but chronologically after my mother, I spoke first German, I could testify before God and man how many Germans said that, damn Hitler, we wish him God knows where. But I tell you, to have an opinion, my dear audience, and to have the guts to stand out and tell me honestly, what would the guts mean? You are imprisoned, you are put in a working camp, you are exterminated, period. A dictatorial system, and the man who speaks to you suffers from both, does not tolerate any contradiction, period. A nice Austrian doctor who helped out once when Hitler had epileptic seizure, because his doctor was in this time ill or something. And this doctor told only to his friends about Hitler. Aber ist ja doch ein Narr. This man is a crazy guy. That was his only sentence. 2 hours later he disappeared, I never found him. Finished. And this again I know absolutely sure, because I know a person who was a good friend of the disappeared doctor. I don't
who
know
who heard the doctor say this?
Yeah, because they were sitting in a restaurant, the Austrians and the Germans like to drink beer. And it was, I don't know what time, don't want me to say exactly, was it 8:30 in the evening, 10:15 in the evening. Suddenly somebody came. This was a very excellent Austrian doctor. The Germans came. Doctor, we have a medical problem. You must come right away.
This was about what year?
When was Hitler in Austria? I don't say now. When I am a public speaker, I was not prepared to have all the chronological chart before me. But it was in a time when Hitler was for a short while in Austria. He several times traveled here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And his doctor was at this time, I don't know, a short illness, only for a couple of weeks or something, or even less. But in this time, he was not available. And Hitler, when he was young, was epileptic, and for a couple of years, by certain miraculous way, it stopped. So he had no seizures for a while, and the seizures returned.
He had grand mal epilepsy.
But for a while, I don't know why, he was out of seizures, then again they returned and went on. And then
was that the nature of his epilepsy, to your knowledge?
One thing I know that sometimes he had seizures when he quarreled with people and they dared to contradict him. And this anger emotion helped to develop the new seizure. And then, I don't know whether in this evening he had a big quarrel with someone or not, but this Austrian doctor was called for medical reasons. The first thing he didn't say how. He was put in a car and carried to a building in which Hitler was. What building was, I don't know. And then he gave the proper medical help and came back. And the friends were still there. Oh, what was, so and so and so, and in a jokey way. And the man who was a real, in German we say, ein lustiger Kerl, he was a real joyful guy, he was still there in a very bad mood. And after, I don't know, being bothered half an hour or 40 minutes or so, he said only that, Aber ist ja doch ein Narr, this man is a crazy man. And this little statement was enough that after 2-3 hours he disappeared and never found him. So nobody knows. Maybe he was killed in the same hour, maybe he was put somewhere. But the man, not under Nazis, not after the war, they never saw this doctor any longer.
Did he describe a classical kind of epileptic seizure also?
No, this doctor didn't say his friends anything. He
did not talk about what.
No,
he said.
I want only now to demonstrate for you, this was the reason of this little story, that do not think, my dear mild American audience, that anybody dared to contradict. And I can give you from my own life and experience, in the United States, when I was several times forced to perform a bad job in school, to be lax in discipline, to give little homework, to get students along with lousy performance and good marks, and I refused that, and for this I lost many of my jobs, an American guy doesn't even contradict in the high school to the principal. So how do you expect here in America that under dictatorial regimes, brown dictatorship, red dictatorship, would you dare to contradict? Mm. You were here so lousy when I was thrown out of school. All the staff who were with me were sorry for me, and not a single man dared to put a word for me.
You talked before in this line about Horthy and
yes.
The fact that you feel he has been misjudged.
Yes.
By many historians.
Yes, let me tell you some. Yes, for instance, a thing what I know very well, and I give you right away now, maybe due questioning this will come up again. I want to tell you that when I give you many informations what happened in Hungary between 1920 and 1940, between the two world wars, because I was in the prison together with very prominent Hungarian leaders, namely the chief secretary of Nicholas Horthy, who retired in 1936-38, but still had very vivid contact with the other political leaders later on too, even if he was not active during the war.
His
so
name
he,
was?
Yes. Vitéz László Magasházi. Vitéz László Magasházi was my prison mate in the same cell from July the 18th, 1949, until March the 11th, 1950. So quite a number of months. He was sleeping on one of my side, on the other side was sleeping the chief guard of Nicholas Horthy, similarly retired in 38 or 39 or when, so similarly not involved in the Second World War, and his name was Gyula Máté Török. In Hungarian we always say first the family name, Máté Török Gyula. So, and I was together in the same cell with generals or half generals or almost generals. I was together with one of our oldest Hungarian counts, Count Pál Esterházy. So I had awfully highly distinguished. He is still alive. He is still alive. He was my cellmate. We were together in the same cell.
Was your knowledge of Horthy based on what you learned during the time you were in prison, or did you have a sense of his thinking during the time that it was actually happening?
Yes. For certain, as I mentioned at the beginning of this tape, the direct line of my family was a humble middle-class family, but our far relatives were in the very high leaders among the one of the chief leader of Budapest was Gyula Baranski, a lawyer, and so I had through my relatives fairly good connection in the society, and due to my theological studies, so I knew about Nicholas Horthy much earlier, and I can say very honestly that he was never a Nazi. He never, even in deeds, he tried to hinder at least as much as possible. And in March, before the German army moved into Hungary, he was in this time just going out to Hitler from himself, complaining what a dirty work the Nazis do in Hungary.
You're talking now about March 44.
In March 44, and he was exactly hammering the table of Hitler, in front of Hitler. Nobody ever in history dared to do this, and I'm still amazed that Hitler did not order his people to shoot Horthy to death.
Was this incident well known, or was this something that was told to you by private sources?
Look, I know two things, but both in what wide circle it was known, I don't know, but two things. When Hitler ordered us to attack Yugoslavia, and in this time our Hungarian almost holy scout leader, whom we like so much, Count Pál Teleki, he was the minister president. And he said, okay, we regret and we want to get back our last territories from Yugoslavia, but for us, for a present moment, for Hungarian purposes, it's more important to be a good ally to them for 15 years or how long we signed this non-aggression pact. I don't remember, if I don't have the paper before me. He said, we signed that, and the Hungarians will, as we most of the time in history were honest and spiny people, we will not contradict. But the Germans forced, and Count Pál Teleki committed suicide. He, the religious Catholic man, he said, under my minister presidency, this will not happen. So this fact, and the other fact that Horthy was hammering the table before Hitler, what nobody ever dared to do, these two things were so well known. For instance, to one of them, what Count Teleki did, Winston Churchill, unfortunately a smart but not too spiny politician, said, whenever will be a peace treaty, in this room will be a chair for Count Teleki with a sign that this would be Count Teleki. Mm. And it will be taken consideration. Don't worry, my dear audience, there was no chair and there was no sign, was not taken consideration.
When there was a lapse in the deportations, the summer of 1944, what is your understanding of Horthy's involvement in that?
He was, although a Protestant, he was absolutely not a belligerent and combatant Protestant. He was a very well-balanced man, and he was in very good relation with the predecessor of Cardinal Mincenti called Cardinal Justinian Charedi. And Justinian Charedi talked to Horthy. Look, what is church matter? I can give you fairly good information. Charedi was on the way to publish an awfully harsh letter in the churches. The letter was printed. The letter was at the post office. And the Nazi spies in the post office broke the packages of the church and read the letter. And rushed to both to the Nazis, rushed to Wiesenmauer, to Meyer, to everybody, that for heaven's sake, 2 days from now we deliver them, they will be read next Sunday in the churches. And then they promised everything that the church should not do it. And Charedi was in this way, I wouldn't say that he was spineless, he hoped, and what you saw really, it was relatively for a while a halt of all this, because for a while at least they kept a part of their promise. And they said, if this stops so and so, but I can say again, that since Horthy had a lot of personal friendship with Jews, So he had a personal experience that the Jews are not the dirty Jews. And I can say, yes, there are some dirty Jews, some dirty Christians, but you cannot say globally that because some of the persons are not honest, 2, 3, 4, 5, then I can put this on the entire people, as we do not accept Hungarians. Some of us are lousy people, fine, but you cannot say all the Hungarians are lousy. We have all good and bad. But Niklas Horthy's personal experience convinced him that the Jews as Jews globally are not these people what Hitler would like to people to believe. And Horthy did not believe it, Horthy did not want to do it. As a matter of fact, what I still cannot prove until now, that some people said that maybe in among the relatives of his wives they are Jews. But we still don't know, but I can say one thing for sure, God can say for sure, with a heavy probability, that what Horthy did, he did simply because he was a man of Christian thinking, regardless if his wife had Jewish relatives or not, what I cannot prove. He did not agree with it, period.
So you are saying then that it was Charedi's letter.
Oh, yeah. Charedi's letter, which should have been read all in all churches on Sunday.
The threat of that letter being read
was
what stopped the deportations rather than Horthy's intervention.
In what percentile I cannot tell you, but try to imagine a country where we are 70-75% Catholics,
mm-hmm.
and we were quite a church respecting people, just like the Polish in Poland. So if in all our Catholic church on the same Sunday this letter will be read, it will have a detrimental influence. But it doesn't, look, Horthy had not too much more influence on Hungary, maybe a little bit more. And number one, you talk to a man who is interested in politics, but he's not a politician. I cannot say for sure, but what I see from many circumstances, Horthy's influence on politics was a little bit more than the influence on the politics in England of the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So he was rather a figure, a symbol, not so much direct. Therefore, I see what I see from my experience, in spite of his symbolic figureness, he had still a greater influence on politics than the English Queen has in England, but not as much as many people would think, because many things in Hungary were running as the politicians wanted to lead, not necessarily as Niklas Horthy wanted. But since most of us were Christians, which means we didn't want any dictatorial system, don't misunderstand, my dear audience, that we have an extreme nature in good mood. We sometimes can bless and swear, which is not too nice. We can drink so good, but for extremities, they never were able to find too many Hungarian Nazis. They never were able to find too many Hungarian communists. In political things, we are not extreme. In mood, in temperament, yes, but in political extremities, if Nazis, who due to stupidity or whatever, were real Nazis, you would find, what can I say, 1.5% in Hungary? The only thing that these little insignificant fragment was supported by the entire Nazi machinery. Not they were strong. Why? You think the communists are strong in Hungary? Yes, supported by a country which has 250 million population. But if today Russia collapses, I think so that would be a bloody revenge in Hungary right away. Many of the communists would hang on the pole of the lamp, I can tell you, I'm sure. Because the Hungarians are awfully desperate, as we were awfully desperate under the detrimental influence of the Nazis.
What's your understanding of the Arrow Cross?
The Arrow Cross was the parallel of the Hakenkreuz, of the swastika. And I can imagine why they had chosen it, because the Hungarians who came from Asia, they were fighting people, soldier people. They always said the Nazis are I'm so sad that this Nazi party called themselves Hungarists from the Hungarians, and this is they represented everything but the Hungarians.
You feel that the Arrow Cross was not representative then of the Hungarians, that it was a Nazi effort?
As I told you, this will come now closer and closer, what you are asking me. I, who was so much involved in protecting Jews, I saw that how many Hungarians were hiding Jews, risking their own lives, that you will hear in a few minutes, that my first appointment came so that heroic Hungarian kids, and again, who sit here in America, you will not believe me, that heroic Hungarian kids, some of them inspired by mamas and papas. So you who listen to me, try to imagine that I, the goy, I am now in the camp, and you, the American Jewish father and mother, will say to little Sam, Sam, can you play near to that camp? And if you see in the grass any little papers, pick them up, put them in your pocket, because maybe they were thrown out from the camp with some messages. Tell me now, you go to your synagogue, sit down and look in the face of God and say him, God, would I encourage my child? Because some of the Hungarian parents encourage their children that play near to this transitory Jewish camp. Throw so far to the ball that it should fall down very near to the camp and look in the grass what you find. And let me come back now to say the end of this little thing. These little papers picked up by 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 Hungarian kids were taken home, and the papa or the mama or the uncle took these papers to the Apostolic Nuncio, to the Swedish embassy, to the Portugal embassy, and they straightened out the papers and you could read, I don't mind now, Abraham Cohn, this and this street, I'm with the Nazis in the last 16 days, I guess that this is the first step, they move us out towards Austria, can you help, etc. Mm-hmm. So from these little papers I got a list from the Apostolic Nuncio, on which were approximately 46, 48 Jews, with the request that I should go to this transitional brick factory, which was in this time not working almost a year, so on the empty grounds of this factory was a very good big fence around it, so this was a transitory Jewish camp.
This was in Budapest?
In Budapest, yes, in October 1944, that I should go there and try to fish out these Jews. And God was so much with me that from the 47 or 48 Jews, I found more than 40, I think, so 43 I found. And these Jews, really, not only I found them, but I was able to order the Nazis to take them to Sheep Utsa, Tizenkettő, Sheep Street, number 12. But you will find in certain books to this, because this was a Jewish house which took care of the different kind of protected Jews, this embassy and that embassy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is good if you know, not because you cannot know it from books, but why should I not tell you? There were 5 embassies who undertook this heroic job. The Portugal embassy, the Spanish, the Swedish, the Swiss, and the Vatican. So we protected Jews when the almighty Nazis were so gracious to us that they allowed that a certain contingent can be protected. In our case, it was a very indecent thing, because when I started to undertake the work, we had orally, and this is the same with the Nazis and communists, as much orally as possible, because if I see a lot of oral things, I can change it, very little in writing. Orally, we had the promise from the Nazis that you can protect 12,000 Jews in 42 apartment houses. And this oral promise was changed in a few days. I just came back to the Nunciatura Apostolica, to the Vatican Embassy in Buda. It was near the old embassy, Vatican Embassy, to the old Royal Castle in Buda on the hill. And I was just coming home and I say, sir, get, or they called me this time, Reverend, get fast to the telephone, because just the Germans are calling, the Nuncio is speaking to them, and the Nuncio, the German, was very poor. He spoke very well Italian and French, Angelo Rotta. So we get for you another line, the Germans want to talk to you, which didn't happen too often, because usually we were contacted by the Hungarian Nazis, and the Hungarian Nazis were backed by the Germans. But in this time, why, I don't know, the Germans talked directly to us. And I said, is ready your list of the 3,000 people? And then I stepped in with my fluent German, and I said to them, gentlemen, can you imagine, I would like to address them, not gentlemen, something else. I said to them, gentlemen, you make a serious mistake. You promised us that we can protect 12,000 Jews in 42 apartment houses. Why are you asking about a list of 3,000? Then there was a diabolic laughter, and I said that you were absolutely impolite, that you are crazy, that was over us. You are crazy.